At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
On today's episode of Nothing Major, we have a very, very special guest joining us, none other than Taylor Fritz, fresh off of his, of course, U.S. Open finals run. He's going to take us behind the scenes of what all went down during those 2 weeks in New York. We'll then be getting into all things Laver Cup, from Jack Sock competing against Roger Federer in his last ever match to some of our favorite experiences as players at that event. So with that, let's get into the show.
Welcome back to Nothing Major. I'm Sam Querrey, joined by my co-hosts Steve Johnson, John Isner, and Jack Sock. Big week for the boys. Two of our pod members played out an exhibition in Napa. Last year, I played this exhibition with Stevie. Stevie beat me in a thrilling three-setter. This year, we had Stevie and John Isner in part two of the Napa Showdown. Guys, how was it? Stevie, I'll start with you. Are you a two-time winner?
I'm a one-time winner and one-time finalist of the Napa Classic up in Napa, California, but lost a heartbreaking third set breaker, 10-8, to John Isner. I've played him a lot in my days. I think I can count up the 11 matches we played on tour. I think he hit more backhand winners in this exhibition than he has in his entirety against me in his entire career. But, you know, look, it was a heartbreaking loss. I'm just trying to move on with my life, really, at this point. You know, it's tough. I lost the white jacket, the white terry cloth jacket that we got for a winner. And I'm just glad that John has it now.
Well, you didn't lose it. You just didn't get another one.
Okay, I was going to ask. Did you have to bring the one from last year?
No.
Okay. I brought it, but it was a gift. You know, it was a gift. You know, it was a winning. So I still have it. I was able to wear it after the match. Kind of, it just made myself feel better. But didn't feel right putting it on after John just clipped me in that one. But I ended up with a nice bottle of wine, which Sam knows that he got last year in his defeat. So I feel like I actually won this year because I didn't need another white jacket. And for a little context here, this jacket is like they give it to all the members. I think there's like 50 or 60, 70 members, Sam might know as well, like at this club. And you get this white, like terry cloth lawn club jacket, you know, as a member. It's really cool. You know, I'm still trying to find the right time to wear it outside of the Lawn Tennis Classic, but it's a it's an unbelievable jacket.
Right now. You should both have your jackets on right now.
Give me a second. I'm gonna go put it on.
Well, you're gonna put it on.
Go put it on.
I'm gonna legitimately go put mine on.
There you go. Go put it on.
Here it is in all its glory.
There's the terry cloth.
It's nice though. Like it'll keep you warm. The Lawn Tennis Club Classic winner from 2024, John Isner.
We got our fourth and fifth members joining us.
We got a special guest today. Sorry, guys.
Appreciate you letting him join.
You do not need to apologize, Jack. You should have seen my morning.
We've got Jack and Brody. We got 4.5 pod members today. Jack and Brody.
John, what did you think about your title? How's the confidence going into this week?
It's crazy. Like, it's funny. You take a year off of tennis and you come back, and I was the best I've ever hit my backhand.
There's no pressure now, right?
There's no pressure. I was just feeling it out there. Movement was a little suspect, I will say, as it's always been. But as it turns out, when you stop playing tennis for a year and you're approaching 40, your movement does not get better. Who knew?
Who is the crowd behind up in Napa?
It was probably John. Yeah. It was like 50-50, but I think they wanted to see John win, obviously, because his career – I will say, John, I think could in 10 years play this event, and you get to a third set with a 10-point breaker. Like, it's just innately in his body that he just serves better in these moments. He hit a couple of serves in the tiebreaker that looked like the John Isner of like 26 years old. It was untouchable. Like, I was like, okay, like, you know what I mean? Like, the arm is still, you know, it's got some cobwebs in there, but I was like, there was a couple serves in there that John hit. I was like, oh my goodness, like, that's like crazy untouchable.
Short in the court. Yeah, I hit an ace on match point 90. There's cobwebs all over my body, Stevie, but luckily for me, I've never had cobwebs in my shoulder. So my shoulder is the
still
one thing that's
in there.
Yeah, that's never ever bothered me, and that's pretty fortunate, I think. But the rest of the body is just real cranky. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I was, you know, even at that point, I was like, I think I can get a racket on this, and it was like, give me a broomstick and another 10-foot pole, and I'm still not touching it.
Congratulations to John Isner on the Napa Classic title.
I don't wonder if ESPN reported on our match, Stevie. I don't think they did. They might have run out of time.
I saw it on the bottom line pre football Sunday, so yeah. I think it's making headlines.
Any wine tasting while you're up in Napa?
Oh yeah,
probably zero.
No, the night before at the Maryvale Winery.
Oh, is there? How nice is Maryvale Winery? That room?
It's incredible, and
it's like one of the coolest places I've ever seen.
And Renee from Maryvale like rolled out the red carpet for everyone, and it was fantastic. I mean, the whole night was very special. I mean, Napa Valley is remarkable. And then the next day, I like hanging out at a friend's house, and I was able to pick some figs off of a tree, and I'm really good at that.
We saw the photo. We'll share the photo. It is like a second career you've kind of come into. Okay, exciting moment for the pod. We've got a fellow non-major winner, Taylor Fritz, joining the podcast. We've got Jack Sock here with me, John Isner. Stevie's going to be joining us in a little bit. I think he's got some home duties he's taking care of. But Taylor Fritz, first American male to make a Grand Slam final in 18 years. So thanks for joining us on the pod.
No, I'm pumped.
Are you gaming right now, dude?
No, I just napped.
What?
What? It's 9 p.m.
It was like a 5 to 8.
Totally normal.
You're a week removed or so. You know, when this comes out, it'll be 2 weeks removed. But for right now, you're a week removed from making the final of the U.S. Open. I know you're probably a little bummed you didn't walk away with the trophy. But now that 7 days have passed, have you kind of put it into perspective? And are you super pumped and proud of like what you accomplished at the U.S. Open?
I don't know. It's like it's a little weird. I think every time I kind of think about it, like, yeah, like I was in the final. I don't think that feeling really like has like maybe fully set in. I think it's cool when I look at like, I guess like the rankings of the race or something. I'm like, oh, that's awesome right now. But to be honest, I feel probably worse than I would have expected to feel if you told me I was making a slam final. And also I couldn't come on the pod if I won. So it's kind of
no, that's you're exactly right. We wouldn't have had you. We honestly wouldn't have had you on the podcast had you won the U.S. Open.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So I had to come on first. Now I'm ready to like win a slam now.
I like that. Out of the entire run, obviously, I'm sure there was a lot of things that you experienced, maybe a lot of new things. But if you had to say what were the most maybe surreal aspects of the entire run to the final, was there something you maybe unexpected or some crazy or some exciting that maybe, yeah, you weren't fully expecting?
I mean, I'd say just like the biggest moment like that feel good moment was just like winning the semifinal match and like just it being over. Cause I was like genuinely one of the most stressful like matches like I've ever played, like going into it. You also had to like sit on it for 2 days, like 2 days after my quarterfinal match. And I'm like, oh man, I'm playing Francis to make it to the finals. Like both of us are going to be so tight. Like, we're both playing to be like the American to make it to the finals. Like it was just, and also it's like one of my best friends. It's just like super stressful. So I think like to be done with that and just like have that feeling like it's over. I'm in the finals. Is like, I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about. Like when you like win a really like tense match and you can kind of just like celebrate after the match is over. It's just like such a good feeling.
Probably similar to when Isner and I played each other first round of Acapulco, you know, back in 2018. It was just a brutal moment.
Totally, dude.
And then actually the other thing as well was just, I'd say like walking out to play the final. Cause it's like, obviously like you walk out on Ash before, but it just felt like really different when I walked out and I'm like, I was just like smiling and I was like almost like before the final, like I was like almost getting emotional. I'm like, holy shit, like it's the US Open. Like I'm walking on Ash, like the final. It's just like, I don't know. It's like a different feeling.
Can I add one thing? Cause I was there, Taylor, for the finals. I was in one of the suites, and when they showed your interview right before you walked out on Ash, you know, they're showing something on the big screen. All of a sudden, boom, they popped to you for your pre-match interview. I don't know if you could hear from the tunnel. I forget what that's like, but the place went nuts when you did your pre-match interview. So that stadium was ready for an American to play the final. They were amped for the match. And like, I mean, me sitting up there in a suite, like I got goosebumps for you with that moment when right when they first showed you doing your pre-match interview. I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, I heard something in the crowd. Like, I think it's a little bit delayed, the interview. So, like, I heard some cheering, like, a little bit afterwards. And I was like, I wonder if they just, like, played my interview or something. Like, because it was Sinner was getting interviewed. And I was like, I hope that's not for Sinner.
No, it was for you. Trust me.
You had a big crowd. You had a big crowd for you.
Feel like. During your run, I'm sure John, Jack, I know I did it. Like, when you're at the U.S. Open, it's on ESPN. If you win matches during the off days or, like, later that night, you'd, like, flick on ESPN to hope they show, like, highlights of your own matches or, like, watch it. Do you... When you're like home on these off days at the U.S. Open, at home and at your hotel, do you have ESPN on? Like, are you checking social media and like watching results and seeing if they flip up highlights of your matches at night?
Not really, actually. I have like the tennis on when I'm doing like treatment or something with Wolf. Like, I definitely get pumped when I like see like something on like social media, like ESPN, like posts like a highlight or something. I'm like, oh my God, they care about tennis for like 1 week of the year. So like maybe I can get some love, but I don't know. I'm not like on like SportsCenter, like, watching top 10, like, oh, like, please put me in there. When it does happen occasionally, like, I'll have, like, so many people just, like, text me, like, oh, my God, you're on SportsCenter.
Yeah. As we all saw, like, with the final, there was a lot of celebrities. Popular question probably amongst tennis fans would be, who would be the most famous person to ask or text you maybe for tickets? Wow, this person, like, wants to come see me play or sit in my box or?
I mean, I don't really want to, like, expose, like, you know what I mean? Like... No, I don't know. I mean, it's cool to see like all the like on the changeovers when they're like showing on the like the big screen, like all the celebrities in the crowd. I see them like, oh, they're watching my match. Like, they're watching me lose right now. Like, almost like pump me up a little bit though. I'm like, oh, I can't lose in front of these people.
That used to, going back, I keep saying this, like 10 years ago, if John and I were playing or Jack, there maybe be like two celebrities at the events. But now for your final or even your semifinal, there was 100 celebrities there. I mean, were you aware? I got to ask this. When you were playing your match, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce were there. Were you aware, like, when they came into the stadium? Or did you not know it for a while? Or did you know it at all during your match?
I mean, I knew they were, like, there. Like I said, like, on the changeovers, they're just, like, showing all of the celebrities on the big screen. And, like, people are going crazy. So I'm, like... I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm looking, like, I'm always looking at the big screen, like, during it. So I'm, like, seeing all the people. I'm like, oh, man.
How do you turn an incredible run with maybe, in your eyes, a disappointing finish, even though it was such a great run, maybe into, like, encouragement or motivation to go forward? And how does that look, you know, in your eyes or from your side?
I think one of the biggest positives I can, like, take out of the whole experience is, I mean, obviously there's, like, a lot of positives, but I don't know, it just makes me feel good going forward is I don't feel like at any point in the tournament I was playing like unbelievable. I don't think like I went on like some like miracle run where I was playing the best tennis of my life and I'm just like, I don't know, playing out of my mind. So I feel like that's really like encouraging for me that I feel like I can just play solid, like good level, you know, nothing insane and have a run like that, have a result like that, you know, win the, you know, draw, I guess, allows it, or a, you know, just playing well, whatever the situation is. I think that was like the biggest positive. I know that just that average level, if I keep working on it, is, you know, capable of getting me deep into tournaments. Cause I think sometimes I show up to tournaments and like everything's not clicking and I'm too quick to kind of like write off the week and be like, I'm not playing well enough to win this week.
After making a final of a slam, do you feel like your confidence right now is like at an all-time high? I mean, obviously you're confident, but like more so than some of those other moments in your career, like winning an Indian Wells title?
Probably not. That's the thing. I feel like at certain times, like I'm very like real with myself of like how I'm actually playing. So like I've won smaller titles, but I've been like, I think I'm playing better. Things are clicking more. I don't know, just this year when I won Eastbourne, or even the one before when I went Eastbourne, both times I felt like it was like just clicking like a lot. And then I felt really, really confident going into both Wimbledons like those years because like I just felt like things I needed to work are working. Like I feel confident right now. Like I said, I feel confident just in like my average level's pretty good. But like, I don't know, there's like a lot of things I'd kind of like to be doing better that I feel like maybe I've in the past like done better.
I'm assuming that adjustment coming from Clay again back to the hard courts, Montreal and Cincinnati, that was really, really tough. And an add-on to that, because you didn't do well. You only won one match in Montreal.
Yeah.
You lost early in Cincinnati. What was your preparation before the US Open? Because you had like 14 days before your US Open match. Did you go immediately to New York? Did you go back to Miami to reset? What did you do to get your mind right to have that great run at the US Open?
I was like very torn after I lost like really early in Cincinnati, whether I should go to like, go to Miami to train or go to LA to like, I guess, relax a little bit. Like it'd been a while. I really wanted to see and hang out with Jordan and then just like kind of chill in LA and like practice and like mentally like reset a little bit. But I was like, oh, if I go home like to the spot in Miami, it's going to be like a little tougher training. A lot of the guys are going to be there. So I was unsure. I ended up going to LA. I didn't think I was playing that awful in Montreal and Cincinnati, like given the circumstances. There's just certain parts of my game that were really bad that were like stopping me from winning those matches. Like I played big points really bad and I was returning second serves like horrendous. Like if someone kicked a serve in my back and I couldn't put it in the court. So
you're basically a bot for two tournaments.
Pretty much, but I got outbotted completely by Nakashima in Cincinnati. He fully outbotted me.
He can bot, dude.
Nakashima's got a sneaky good serve.
Yeah, so I went back to LA. I spent some, like, I think I chose more, like, the mental recovery than, like the physical training part of it. And then I think that allowed me to, when I got to New York on Monday, so still a week early, it allowed me to feel really ready to just, like, put in a lot of work pre-tournament. So, like, I got in a ton of practice and fitness and, like, worked really hard that week and kind of just got my game feeling in, like, a good place to, like, play the tournament.
Paid off. Have you got back on the practice court yet since the Open?
Yeah, it's been absolutely brutal, actually. I practiced the last 3 days, and it's been so insanely hot in Florida right now. Like, it's so hot. And I've basically been, like, fighting, like, going into, like, full-body cramps after, like, my practices on, like, Friday and Saturday. And, like, we didn't even do anything crazy. We practiced for, like, almost 2 hours, and I got to the point at the end of the practices where, like, just swinging the racket was like making me just like absolutely gas. Like I was going to pass out. So just been like grinding through these.
How did you digest the match? Like in the immediate aftermath? I mean, like, I know you spoke about it, like, obviously you're disappointed, but did you ever have a moment where you kind of sat back and like, wow, that's really cool what I did. I mean, did you have fun in New York City for a night or two?
Yeah. So what happened was after the match, I'm obviously like, I'm feeling bad. And like, it's not like, I don't know. It's more like, I think I would have been a lot happier, like, if I had lost, but feel like I, like, just played better. And I think I was just really disappointed and, like, just not playing as well as I would have liked to play. And so, like, I was just feeling, like, bad. And then kind of everyone came in and it's like, look, all I had so many friends over there from, like, all over, like, you know, like, I don't know, like, four different, like, of my, like, friend groups, like, my hometown friends, my friends, like, from LA, like, tons of different groups of people there. And we're like, look, everyone's here. They want to celebrate. They want to like just, you know, have like a fun night. And I was like really not feeling it. But I was just like everyone's here. Like, I don't know, like Mike and Wolf and Matt, like my whole team was basically like, you should go try to celebrate a bit and like enjoy it. So I went out and I mean, like we went out and had fun, but it just like, it's just not the same. I'm like not, I couldn't really like celebrate it like I wanted to, you know what I mean?
You'll get more opportunities.
And then since then, I came back to Miami. I've been sitting at my desk playing video games for like 12 hours a day and eating pretty unhealthy. And then just honestly, like really just destructive like habits when I'm like by myself, like after like a tournament and I like have some time off. But yeah, I got back into it a couple of days ago and I'm rebuilding, so I'm ready to go for like next week.
You know, like US Open, it's obviously on ESPN every day, and your matches, like in particular, you're playing night matches, like prime time. It's only been 7 days. Have you noticed, have you been like been recognized like more so in the last week than like your normal career, like go back 8 months ago? Are you getting stopped at the airport like when you flew back to Miami and or if you're going out to dinner and stuff?
For sure, actually. I feel like, to be fair, I feel like I get, when I'm in LA, no one cares about me at all, for sure.
You're a small, like, you're a small fish in LA, in Hollywood.
Yeah. Like, I really enjoy, like, being in LA, like, no one gives a shit at all. But I do feel like when I have been in Miami in the past, it happens a little bit more, but definitely since the final, like, yeah, like for sure. I haven't been in public like that much. Like I said, I've been in my room playing video games for 12 hours a day. But when I have like gone out, when I like walk outside like two blocks to go to like the Chipotle or the Starbucks across the street, like, yes, like I've definitely noticed a little bit like different than normal.
Chipotle, nice brand awareness there.
It's literally across the street from where I live here.
If you were to go out to dinner right now, you and Morgan, your girlfriend, who gets noticed more at this point?
Ooh, that's a good question. Assume you're going out in New York City too.
Yeah, I feel like she's pretty noticeable. She's got a lot of followers on socials.
I think it could totally depend on like where we are. You know,
New York City.
If we're in like, no, I mean, but like the like
we you're go in to a dinner trendy like... Italian restaurant in West Village.
So we've got like a younger group there.
Younger group. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's like 30 and under.
She might get recognized more than me, or like 50-50.
I like that.
Okay. But it's definitely not you like 100%.
I think normally it'd be me more. I think certain situation like that, like a gotcha. Younger group, it can be 50-50 for sure. Yeah. Like she's going to get like getting recognized quite a bit.
Yeah. I feel like especially like in America too.
A nice trendy dinner in LA. Who's getting noticed more?
Probably neither one of us. We can just like chill and do our own right, thing.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's got Leo DiCaprio next door eating with us. So it's like,
honestly, I might get some like old guy that comes up to me and like, because he like likes tennis, but like that's about it. But well, I've like walked past a girl and a girl has been like, Morgan's boyfriend.
Oh, that's got to sting a little bit, right?
I think it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny, I guess.
I think it's really funny, honestly. Like, I respect it.
At the Open this year, like obviously the player boxes look like NASCAR events now. Yeah. I think it's cool. Like your whole box, you got like your coach Mike Russell, Physio Wolf, Pollyanna Cohn, Morgan, your parents. Were you guys wearing the Lucky Energy shirts? Like Lucky Energy, all that stuff. My question is, when those like deals come by, are those being run through you? Like does your agent Matt Fawcett like ask you if they can wear them, or is he just going to the player box and saying, hey, I got deals for you guys now?
No, so they're not doing that. They're not involved in that like at all. Like it's kind of like Wolf like grinding and like talking to people and like seeing like who's got deals and who wants to get like the brand in the box. It has absolutely nothing to do with me. Like I think, to be fair, I think what they wore in the finals, like it looks much like cleaner than what they were wearing at like other points of the tournament. Like I've had Wolf like on the court with like a massive like QR code on his shirt. It looks so stupid. At the end of the day, like they're getting paid for it. And so like I'm not gonna tell my team like they can't do whatever, they can't wear this, they can't do that, because if they're gonna make more money, like awesome for them. You know, it's not really like I'm not getting a cut. It has nothing to do with me. But I told Wolf, like, I was like, if you guys want to look like idiots, like, go for it. Like, I'm not going to stop you from, like, I'm not going to stop you from making, like, extra money. So, like, it's, you know, it's whatever.
No, and they look like idiots. You hit the nail on the head there. But I do it, too.
Like I said, what they were wearing for the finals looked way more, like, acceptable. But, like, some of the times, it's so nuts. And I'm like, guys, like, it looks so bad. But, again, like, I'm not going to get in the way of them, like, making some extra money.
It's capitalism.
Yeah. Like All right. Stevie finally joined us. Stevie, thank you. I don't know what you're putting your kids to bed.
Yeah, a little bedtime situation. You know, it's, you know, a little tough sometimes.
All right. Good work.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Stevie.
Sorry. What's up, Fritzy? Congrats, dude.
What's up?
It's just bedtime shenanigans. I'm back.
All right, Fritzy, you've been the top American for the most part of the last 2 years. You get jumped every now and then. I claimed last week that in the course of the next 200 weeks, I think you're going to hold the number one American spot for 180 of the weeks minimum. Who is the biggest threat to jumping you as the number one American?
It's tough to say because things can just change so fast. You know what I mean? Like with like one big week, someone that you didn't maybe like think was going to be close to passing you just now like there. But obviously, Francis has like a lot of points now for the next year because of he's building off of a Cincinnati final plus a US Open semi. So he has like a really good base over the next year to like contend. And then Tommy's just been really, really consistently good. Like him and I have been super close in the race for the past 2 years, basically. maybe even more. Like we've been very close. And then Ben is interesting because Ben sometimes just like he gets hot and he'll win a big tournament. He win a couple big titles. And so like, that's kind of what it takes to like get a lot of points and like almost like jump into like whatever I think, you know, into the top 10 is like, you need some really big results. You know how it is. It's not that rewarding to be making like quarters and semis. It's like really rewarding to like lose early some weeks and then just go title when you have a good week. So I think it literally could be any of them. I can't actually like pick.
Smart man. You won Indian Wells in 2022 and like fast forward now 2.5 years later, final of the US Open. I think you're a much better player now than when you won Indian Wells. What do you think like the biggest differences are in your game between now and when you won Indian Wells 2.5 years ago?
I think I'm coming forward to net better for sure. I'm like recognizing opportunities to come forward a lot better, to just like kind of knock off like easy volleys when sometimes I let people like reset points. But I'm moving about the same still. Maybe I think this year, maybe I'm serving a little bit better than I was that year. I actually think that year I might've been playing from the baseline as good or even maybe a little bit better, but I think my like just baseline, like average level, what I show up with every day is better. That's what I think. I think when I won Indian Wells, I was playing really good tennis. I was playing like, I was like, in my mind, I was like, from the ground, I'm playing like the best tennis of my life. Right now, I don't necessarily like feel that, but my just average level is just a lot better, I think.
All right, moving on to Laver Cup, but don't worry, we have more from Taylor later on in the show.
All right, guys, heading into this week's Laver Cup heavy episode, I, as the solo member of this podcast who has never had the pleasure of playing that beautiful event, will be asking the questions this week because the only stories I have are from my couch. So
I only played it once. I'm not that far behind you. Our other two members here played it combined like 7 or 8 times, I feel like.
Distinguished members.
Distinguished members, yes. You guys are Laver Cup royalty.
I played Laver Cup 4 times. I went 0-4. And the 1 year that I missed when I got hurt, the team won.
Oh,
so
okay. That's,
yeah.
Well, that's tough. Jack, you played 5 times?
I played on the team 4 times. I was there in Boston as a practice partner because I was coming off that adductor injury that I sustained at the US Open that year. But so I've been present at 5, played in 4.
So let's get into it from username Borjan. How hard do players actually try in Laver Cup? Do you guys hold back a bit, or is it just full go from first ball?
Oh no, it's full bore right from the beginning. I mean, even in 2017 in Prague, I will say I think all the players didn't really know what we were getting into as far as that event is concerned. We were maybe a little bit up in the air, like, is this an exhibition? Is this a serious event? And like, I think most of us went into the match thinking, all right, this is a serious event. We want to win. This is really cool. Playing against Roger and Rafa on the other side of the net. Like, all right, let's enjoy these 3 days. And really right from the first ball, the very first match was Francis versus Grigor. And they had a very competitive match. And there was no mucking about on that court. And then really right from there, everyone took it extremely seriously. And so for me, this is not an exhibition at all. Yeah, we're not playing for points, which of course is our currency on the tour, but like you're playing for pride and you want to win. And the crowd, the atmosphere that you get to experience at Laver Cup, like it makes you play your best tennis. It makes the hair stand up on your arms. It was fantastic. So really starting right then in 2017 in Prague, Sam was there, Jack was there. So all three of us were there, not an exhibition at all.
No, I was so nervous that, like I say, I was on the team with you guys, the first one in Prague. I actually played Federer in his first Laver Cup match. I've like never been so nervous in my life. I think I lost, you guys were there, I lost bad. 6-4, 6-2 maybe, 4-3, but not even a close 4-3. Just he absolutely routined me. I like could never get comfortable. I was out of my element. But yes, people, you try as hard as you can. You're playing for your team and you almost feel like you owe it, especially the first one too, like to Roger. Like, all right, this is Roger's event. Make sure you give the maximum best effort you could possibly give. You're giving your all out there. Do you guys remember, Jack and John, like the first one in Prague, every night you got back from your room, there was like a new gift on your bed. Did they keep doing that?
It's so good. Yeah,
It was unbelievable. You'd get so excited to come back from practice. You're like, what's on my bed? The first day was luggage, and the next day would be cufflinks. And then one day you got the Snapchat glasses.
Yeah.
And it just became that like you had to like run back to your room to see what like fun gift was going to be left for you.
And in Chicago, we got for every sports team, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Bulls, the Blackhawks. I don't know if I'm – the Bears, excuse me. We all got jerseys with our names on the back. Like it was
– Oh, that's cool. You got all of them?
Every team from that city.
Like different team each
no,
day?
No, I think we all got them in one fell swoop. But yeah, like – I mean, it's like Francis's dream, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, and then I wore him out on the court, trying to get the crowd on our side. I remember.
Yeah, exactly. And that, and so we came up with, and then like, you know, our team in Prague, Sam, we started doing these like goofy celebrations, and it's like people thought initially that like that we had a script we had to follow like right from the get go. Like, no, of course not. Like, but you know, we had these celebrations we were doing that were just completely natural, out of the blue, and the crowd got into it because we were like massive underdogs. We had to like, you know, do some goofy stuff to try to like stem their momentum. And I think it worked a lot. So our team played very inspired. And that first year in Prague, it almost came down. I mean, the final score I think was 15-9. But if Nick wins that last match with match points, I think against Roger at 12-9, then someone would have played, it would have been Jack plus someone would have played a one set doubles match.
It would have been you and Jack probably favored in a doubles match against whoever they put out.
Whoa. One set.
I had never had more, probably never had more adrenaline coursing through my body in that Sunday because I won doubles and I won singles as well. And like, I mean, I wanted Nick to win so bad because I think I would have hit a serve 170 miles an hour if I got to play that last doubles match. I was drinking Coke and like, I was like all hopped up and, you know, didn't get to that point, but it was such a fun event.
Who do you think they would have played? I'm assuming it would have been you two probably for the doubles for Team World. Who do you think they would have played against you guys had that first Laver Cup gone 12-12?
I think Roger and Rafa.
I think Roger and Rafa too.
Or Roger and Zverev. Hey, Roger and Zverev was a lot like their Sunday doubles team, but probably Roger Rafa for the...
Just for the gravitas.
Yeah. Is that a word? Yeah, yeah, just for the event, the first year of the event to have it come down to...
You got to have Roger and Rafa, right?
Most likely.
One set of doubles to decide the whole thing.
It would have been unreal.
It would have been crazy.
Well, it goes to a breaker. Six all would have gone to a
six
breaker.
All, like breaker. Yeah, not a pro set, just like flat out one set. And almost, I mean, it hasn't happened. And it might not ever happen, right? But it almost happened in the first year.
That would have been the most electric 40 minutes of tennis like of all time.
Yeah. So at that point, I was like full of confidence. I mean, I was like, I played so well that day.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was just like, I was ready to go.
Is that after you beat Rafa in singles?
Yeah, and then we won the dubs the first match. Oh, I got a funny story. We won the dubs in the first match in Prague and against Burdich and Chilich, Jack?
Yeah, Sunday morning, yeah.
And Sunday morning, and I was so nervous because it was 11 a.m. start or 12 o'clock
start. You're talking about the first game of the match?
I'm talking about the first two games. Oh. Jack won the first 12 points of return of serve for our team. I did not run a single return point. I got to the point where I look at Jack, I'm like, Jack, I need you to miss the return, dude. Because it was like deuce, add in for them, back to deuce, add in for them, back to deuce. And like Jack was on fire. I could not make a ball. I was so nervous, but I eventually were able to win the match. But Jack was in one of those like double zones that day. And
I
was rooting for him to miss returns because he kept bringing it back to deuce to me and I kept losing the point.
It's bad fellowship. Like that.
Yeah, but it was 12 in a row. Jack won the first 12 points on return for our team.
All right, another user question here from username Rika Burr. Did a small part of Jack want to let Federer and Nadal win in Fed's last match?
No. I mean, I would say no. I think it was obviously a very weird match for sure. You know, didn't necessarily know how Roger was going to play coming back from injury. Obviously, the crowd is going to be so against us. Obviously, probably the biggest in my career, in Francis's career, and playing Roger, playing Rafa, Nadal, we're playing, you know, two of the goats of our sport. But ultimately, we want to try to put a point on the board for our team. That's what we're always trying to do at Laver Cup, and you know, no matter the circumstance or situation. And unfortunately, it was in, you know, his last match, and we. We're fortunate to come out on top, but it was definitely a very weird match. Feelings out there, and you know, four people cheering for us in the whole stadium, and we tried to just feed off each other and the bench. But by far, the weirdest match I've ever played, without a doubt.
You know, I was at home, just like Sam, watching that. I was definitely rooting for Roger. Sorry. Like, that's just, you know, kind of a storybook ending, you know. But I was, I'm not even sure your teammates on the bench were rooting for you at that point, because that was a Friday
doubles. I
was kind
of hoping he just outplayed us and won, to be honest.
there was a little bit of that. Like, oh, gosh.
Yeah. It was Friday night. I think it was the first night. So he wanted the first doubles match and then be done.
When you and Francis won, did you go out to the center of the court after and kind of like acknowledge the fans, or did you just quietly go to the bench?
No, we hugged Roger at the net. I don't even know if we might have just like quick high fived, and then we hugged Roger at the net, and we literally just went to the side and just let him take as much possible, you know, time as he wanted out there. And then I think when the emotions started flowing and players started crying and he started crying, it was just overall a crazy time. And I don't know. I mean, something I'll never forget.
Watch the Ellie Goulding concert.
Yeah. The Ellie Goulding concert. I didn't see that coming. That was crazy. The whole night was just, I don't know. It was special and it was crazy. And we were the villains that night, unfortunately, but also I'd also feel like, yeah, I feel like it was, you had to give your best effort when you're on the court, and that was the outcome in that one. It was, yeah, surreal moment and weird all at the same time.
Yeah. I remember, I was supposed to be a part of that team. I tripped over my own feet at the US Open and broke my wrist.
That's right.
Of course I had to miss Laver Cup. Right. And then, you know, and then Roger announces his retirement, and I was like, honestly, probably one of the most disappointing times of my whole career, just because like I was on the team, then I had to pull out, and just I wasn't, you know, of course you want to have a front row seat for a spectacle like that. So watching it on TV was tough for me. But I mean, what an amazing for Jack to be a part of that. And again, to be the answer to that trivia question forever, you and Francis played Roger in his last ever match.
All right, it's a good little segue here from another fan question from Mr. JPI. Did Jack and Francis face any backlash, you know, on social media from beating Fed and Rafa in their last match, in Roger's last match?
Absolutely. That'll forever be the most hate and negativity and criticism I have ever received. And I mean, we get some crazy, crazy stuff, I think, especially from people that, assuming, gamble on the sport, and they like to DM you after, you know, your normal ATP losses, and they say some pretty horrible things. This was tenfold of that, just with all the obviously loyal Roger Federer fans, Rafa Nadal fans out there over the years. We were literally the, I would say for a period of time, probably two of the most hated people in sports for like 48 hours. I mean, it was incredible. It never stopped. Like,
I sent you multiple messages from my burner accounts.
Yeah. It was crazy. It lasted for a while too. It was brutal.
I got a question. Francis hit Roger with a ball during that match, right? Just in the middle of the point. Like, yeah. Nothing weird. Did you guys, when he did that, did you and Francis like turn to each other and kind of give it the, like, oh my gosh, what'd you just do? Or is it like a dude, good shot? Like, take this guy down.
No, it was obviously not. You're not trying to hit Roger at all, but
no. Sometimes it's the right shot to go.
I mean, just, yeah, in doubles, it was the right shot. But I think we looked at each other, and we're like, oh no, because like we obviously, like I said, we already have 99.9% of the stadium cheering against us, and now you're hitting Roger in his last match. It was just a bad, overall bad situation.
All right, this one comes from Neil Prakash. Were Isner and Sock the greatest doubles team in Laver Cup history? They have a 3-0 record. It's tough to beat.
You know?
The answer is yes. I won't make you guys brag about yourself, but yes, you are the greatest doubles team in Laver Cup history. 3-0. I know it's not like a ton of matches, but you guys probably could have gone 10-0. You beat all the best players. Like,
they're also the crucial Sunday morning matches, I would say.
Yeah, that's, you guys won in big matches. We're looking at the two best doubles players, the best doubles duo in Laver Cup history, right here on the pod.
Thank you for the time being.
Wow, Sam, I appreciate that. I do think Jack and I were a pretty good doubles team when we were fired up. But those matches, man, like nervous, nervy matches, but just like the feeling of getting over the hump for your team, like in that first match on Sunday, to kind of every single time it felt like we would reel our team back into the tie because it was worth 3 points.
I have to. I mean, they were the I mean, it's the most crucial doubles match, and you start Sunday with it, so it's either kind of a big downer for the team and or could even be possibly over or close to over. You bring the team back, we could be down 12-5 or 12-7 to start the day, and all of a sudden you win the match, and it's, you know, you're down now you're one match away from now having the lead or winning or whatever it is. So against Roger and Zverev, our comeback in the third set tiebreak, I think we were down match point 9-8, and then I think that was the greatest like little stretch of comeback and win. They had serving match point because Roger missed the first serve to me finally for the first time because I couldn't read a serve for the life of me.
Yeah. And he hit a pretty cheesy second serve, I can remember.
Yeah, because I ran around. Because sometimes he would hit that little cutter tee and keep you over there, especially for me when I ran around.
Yeah.
But he kind of threw in a little softy kicker, and I was able to run around and kind of get the point started, I guess.
And the same thing with Tsitsipas and Federer in that, what was that,
Geneva?
Yeah, like that was, I think we won that match 10-8 in the third, yeah. And we beat Sasha and Fed 11-9. So it was, I don't know, nervy times that we were able to get over the line each time.
All right, another question here from ConnorDavies.26. Boys, what was your favorite Laver Cup venue, both home and away?
Okay, my favorite away venue was Geneva because, of course, Roger. And I got to play Roger in singles on Sunday in Geneva. I mean, that was like absurd. And I actually had a chance to clinch the match for us. Of course, didn't win, but I mean, talk about a hornet's nest. I mean, that was like insane getting to play him, you know, almost in his hometown, right? I mean, of course, in his home country. Home tie, I would have to say Chicago. I mean, it was Chicago and Boston. Boston was amazing. We just got killed. So Chicago, I would say, was my most memorable home tie because the match was so close and we had so much support in the United Center.
Yeah, I'm going to have to double down on the home tie with Chicago for sure. Just being sports fans in general and just knowing what the Bulls Arena is and the United Center, everything that's happened in there over the years and with basketball and hockey, I mean, everything, but especially basketball and Jordan playing in there, it just was, I don't know, it was just kind of crazy to be in there and fairly surreal as well. And like you said, the crowd was incredible. We had chances to win. We had the epic doubles, you know, we had epic Sunday doubles and I don't know, the whole thing was amazing.
Did Michael Jordan go to the Laver Cup in Chicago? Did he make an appearance?
No. Definitely not. But to Jack's point, like, you know, using the Chicago Bulls, obviously it's a little different from the 90s teams, but using their locker room, like their home locker room, for
it's
us,
gotta be
like,
unreal.
Pretty cool. I mean, you see all the banners and the trophies and the, you know, in the trophy case, and it was it was awesome. And I in Chicago, I played like this on Sunday again. I played this unbelievable match against Roger. I actually had match point on my serve. I felt like I had 90% of the crowd on my side, which was insane. I never thought it would be the case. But the crowd really did take on like the underdog role of like Team World, and Chicago especially did. But I had match point on my serve in the second set.
You played
tiebreaker.
A great point. I mean,
I went wide, of course, on the ad side, a 6-5 in the tiebreaker. And Roger hit this kind of like a squirrely return, had some weird spin, and it was like kind of high, but it landed pretty short. But the ball was kind of below the height of the net. I mean, I'm at this point, I'm like 4 or 5 feet from the net, and Roger's sitting there on the backhand side. So he has to make a decision. Is he going to dart to the open court or stay home? I hit the wrong shot. I hit it back up the line. He stayed home and he ripped this backhand cross pass. He fires up.
It wasn't even like a rip passing shot though. You hit a ball like this far from the baseline. He hit like a short hop one-y cross, and I was like,
yeah. He took it. Yeah, I actually hit a pretty good shot.
He hit a great shot
to him, but he took it on the rise and just went bzing.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and it makes it 6-6. We switch sides. He ends up winning the tiebreaker. That was tough because I knew I was kind of in trouble at that stage. I mean, I had the match, of course, on my rack. It's one thing for me to have a match point on return, but to have it on serve, of course, I like my chances there, but wasn't able to take Roger out. But that was
one of his biggest sellies I feel like I've seen from him in like a long time. He went nuts.
There's nothing more intimidating in tennis than a Roger Federer like come on or celebration. It's the most intimidating thing in tennis because he does it so infrequently that when he does it,
Might as well shake hands.
Just like John said, you're just like, oh, I'm in trouble now.
When he won the second set, he fired up. And this goes to the, you know, back to our previous discussion, like not an exhibition. Because watching Roger at the Laver Cup against you in Prague, Sam, and against the doubles match play, I mean, this guy was firing up, looking to his bench. And I remember his celebrate looking at him after he won the second set. I'm like, I'm cooked. That was the case.
Anyways, my favorite away tie was the O2 Arena in London. Roger's last event. I also just think that arena is incredible, and I like London in general. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the O2.
Mine, I played one in Prague, so Prague would be my favorite venue.
One for one. I like it. All right, Taylor, we've got a couple would you rather questions to wrap this interview up.
Would you rather for some of these? Some of them are just A or B. Some of them you're going to choose like one of us.
Okay.
Don't be shy. We've ripped each other enough.
Yeah, I can't wait.
All right. First question. Which one of the four of us did you look up to the most when you were a junior?
It can be none of the above, too.
I'll pick of the four of you guys. I would say John. Just because John was like
tallest.
The top American for John was the top American for like the whole time I was growing up, pretty much.
I was able to bot you a few times when you were really young too. first round Wimby.
Side note, yeah. Taylor's record against all of us, he's 3-3 against John. He's
phenomenal.
3-2 against me. He's 4-2 against Stevie, and he's 5-2 against Jack, I think.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I think I started 2-0 and I got wrecked after.
Fritzy owns this group in the head-to-heads, basically.
I felt like Stevie kind of owned me for a bit, though.
For like a brief like 6 month period. Then you beat me four times in like 4 weeks.
I hated playing Stevie.
Yeah, but you beat me at Wimby with like one knee after surgery. Then you beat me at Atlanta. Then you beat me in Cabo.
I remember we played.
You beat me anywhere else that summer? Like you just
we played at three tournaments in a row. I remember that.
Stevie lost his mind against you in Cabo. Go yeah. figure.
Well, no, duh. I've just been like getting taken to the woodshed for a month. You know, at some point a guy snaps. Okay.
All right. This is a good one. Would you rather win one U.S. Open or two Australian Opens?
Ooh.
Two kangaroos on your bag or one U.S. Open trophy on your bag?
That's a good question.
I think I'd prefer to take the Open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like that feeling and like that energy. I don't know. I just feel like that's like, I'm like, it doesn't make sense like money or points wise at all, but career wise. But I think like that experience is just like, it's too good to pass up.
Totally.
Would you guys do the same?
Yeah. US Open for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same.
Okay. Okay.
All right. I got one just to include all of us again. No hard feelings anywhere here. If you could play one of us in the U.S. Open finals, who would you like to play?
Stevie. It's got to be Stevie.
Yeah. I mean, if it's the summer of like 2018, it's me, because then Taylor's another just
all
win.
Of us, assume all of us are at our peaks.
It's peak.
Yep.
Yeah.
Primes.
Still feel like there's an easy answer here.
I guess probably I'd still go Stevie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sorry,
Stevie. He said he hated playing him.
What do you mean? Like, yeah, what am I supposed to do? Like,
if I'm peak against John, I'm getting absolutely botted.
True.
I'm going peak against Sam. I'm also still getting botted. Like, if I'm going peak against Jack, like your peak's when you're playing, you're very, very, very good. Like, it's like, I'm left with like my last option.
So what you're saying is you like your chances in the backhand-to-backhand rally with Stevie?
I honestly hate – I'm not going to lie. I hate the backhand-to-backhand with Stevie.
It's actually a good point. The slice was so nasty.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
I actually feel like when I started – like when I kind of like started doing better against you, I started playing into his forehand more.
That was the play.
You do have to play the Stevie forehand. Yes. You got to get him out wide to the forehand to open up the back. Exactly right.
That's correct, yeah. Lucky for me, I have one win. I have like 10 losses on center court at Indian Wells, like legitimately every year. The only win I have over there is over Taylor.
Got me though.
So I'm like, but I'm never going to tell these. I'm going to tell them it's like Taylor, like 2021 or like nobody's ever going to ask, you know?
Yeah. Not, it was 2013, you know. Taylor, when he was
early,
15 years old.
You know, not that early, but pretty early, pretty early. I got one for you. So we got for you coming up, you got the Asian swing, you know, after a few other events, mm-hmm. you got a long flight to Asia. You got no TV, mm-hmm. no headphones, no phone.
Raw dogging it.
You're raw dogging it.
Raw dog that thing.
Who you sit next to out of the four of us?
Out of the four of you guys?
Yeah. Who are you sitting next to, and who are you least likely to sit next to? So what?
Yeah, actually, rank us.
Yeah, 1 to 4. Yeah, yeah.
Rank
one
us. Come on, you got to do it.
Oh, don't make me say who. Nah, come on, man.
1 to 4. Let's see it. Who you?
Come on.
I mean, I'm gonna take up all your leg room, so it's
That's a bit. It's a first class seat. It's not economy. Like, you know, he's gonna be in business.
Don't make me rank least.
You got two beds next to each other, but you got to chat the whole time.
No.
Come on, 1 to 4.
I can't.
I've already been taking the fourth all day.
The
so
thing I don't want.
All right, just give us one. You just give us one then. Just give us one.
I don't want I don't want to go 1 to 4 because like whoever I put at 4, it's not like I need to like sit next to this guy. Like it's like I would be happy to like be chilling with any of you guys. But
who's the one? Who's
all right, just give us
who's
the one
you're gonna take?
To Sam, I'll give it to Sam. Honestly, I think Sam's
that's the right
entertaining,
call.
Just entertaining for like
that's the right
you
call.
You can count on an awkward interaction with Sam. He's Larry David. Something's gonna happen.
You're gonna always count on Sam.
We've played video games together. I'm the most similar to you age wise. That hurts the feeling.
But there's no video games, dude. You're just
I'm just saying. But like we can chat about video games. We can.
Yeah, we just said nothing.
Well, I said you're I think you I'd have like the most entertainment from like both of you guys, but yeah, Sam.
You either take one shot from this group. It can't be Isner's serve.
Okay, yeah.
You get one other shot from this group of people to add to your game right now. Who's you taking? Or what's the shot?
I think I'd want like Jack's volleys.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Like the touch and like the net Jack's like net game.
You'd be pretty nasty.
I think that's what I want.
How are you going to say the Stevie slice?
No.
That was a close one too, but like I don't really like.
He doesn't need it, dude.
Think I'd want to use the slice that much.
I only use the slice strictly because I have zero back end. It's out of like necessity. Like I'm not choosing to run around like an idiot all day. You know that's just not what I got to do. All right, last one, and then we're going to let Taylor go. You got to pick one of the four of us. Each of our worst qualities to add to your game. My backhand. Jack's backhand, topspin, John's movement, or Sam's volleys. I mean, they're terrible, dude. They're terrible. Like, which one could you add to your game and still win a slam?
My volleys are so much better than your topspin backhand.
I agree, but like, I agree with that. I've seen your volleys. They're bad, dude. I've played doubles with you a lot. Don't, but that's a good question.
Which one could I take and make it work?
Which one do you take out of the four of those and still win a slam?
Well, it's a really easy answer to say Sam's volleys. So I feel like my volleys are definitely not any better as is. So like I'm not really changing too much. But like I guess we'll take that out because it's like
take that out.
I don't know. I think that's too easy. But I think I would just take like your backhand, Stevie, and just make it work with the slices.
All right.
I don't know. I think my forehand would get way better if I had to just depend on like the forehand.
It legitimately has to. I'm telling you from experience. Like, there's no other option.
Yeah, it's the only option.
Yeah, I feel like Stevie and Jack, your forehands were so good because like you ran around. You guys both ran around your backhand better than anyone that played the game.
Because you had to.
Yeah, my toppy backhand I made work though. It wasn't like it was atrocious, but it wasn't like that.
But
that
both bad. Of you guys could both of you guys could hit it line pretty good, especially like Jack. Like Jack, you hit your backhand line like pretty good.
Just shoved it.
But no, I don't know. I feel like people love to talk about like the what ifs. They're like, well, what if this person had like a backhand? Well, if they had that backhand, then they probably wouldn't have the forehand. Like, it's like,
you're so right.
That is true. Yeah.
If you had my movement, Taylor, you're not making another Grand Slam final.
I barely make it work with what I have right now.
All right, cool, Taylor. Thanks for joining us. Good luck at Laver Cup.
Yeah, thanks,
hopefully
guys.
Team World gets another
good
win.
Luck in
good
Berlin.
Luck in Asia and then year end finals.
It's gonna be tough for us.
Yeah, you got
Team
it.
Europe's always good, but
just get it done on Sunday.
We had Tommy and Demon R pull out, so it's looking a little rough.
Oh, really?
We'll see. Yeah,
you're gonna need a lot of points from you.
But yeah,
good luck to you guys, man. Go Team World.
Thanks.
Hey, pull a Jack and play all three doubles. All right, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
They really don't want to see me. J-Mac has really not wanted to see me in the doubles in my Laver Cup career. I've always like made a case for myself. I'm not. I think this year might be the year. I honestly think me and Ben would be a very good team.
Yeah.
Because like if
it brings so much firepower.
I just need my partner to serve.
Well, your returns are sick too. You just gotta get the guy active at the net. I feel like.
Yeah, no, I get my partner broken. So like I need my partner to just be a bot and then I'm fine.
Ben's good at that.
Yes. It's a good point.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for the time.
Appreciate it. Good luck, dude. It was fun.
All right. Absolutely.
See you guys.
Got to get him on before he's a major winner, you know?
All right, everyone. Before we close this week's pod, this is something that I mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago. We want to try something a little bit different. This is something that I've seen on social media. I have not seen it in the tennis world, but I've seen it in other sports, and it seems to pick up a lot of traction. It's just quite simply name a random player. But for us, of course, this little segment is name a random tennis player. The more random, the better. Like this guy, I don't even know if y'all have heard of him. I don't know. I remember watching him play when I was really young, and it's Slava Dosadel.
Who is that?
Never heard of him. Yeah, that's a random tennis player right there. I've never heard of him.
I feel like you just made that up.
Dude, Slava Dosadel, Czech Republic, turned pro in 89. So he played throughout the 90s. Okay. Career high number 26 in the world.
Oh my God.
Quarterfinals of the US Open. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a great one, dude.
I think people, if they're younger than us, they're not going to know the name. I think anyone older than us, anyone in their 40s, 50s.
That's Karatsov in 25 years.
There you have it. Exactly. Slava Dosadel.
All right, Stevie J, let's close out this episode.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nothing Major. If you are enjoying this podcast, we have a favor to ask you guys.
Subscribe, leave a rating, and review. All three of these things really help us from a growth standpoint and help us bring you guys more great tennis content. If you aren't already, make sure to follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube using our handle at NothingMajorPod. Yes, we know we aren't posting full videos on YouTube yet, but we do have plans to post long-form episodes and content there.
Subscribe now so you're the first to see it. And we'll see you guys next week.
See you next week. That felt good.
Dude, I'm getting so much better.